Today at 6:30 is the time, I believe. So we'll start the meeting. I'll call meeting the order and those in attendance. What do we got? Heidi's here. Julius is not. James, Lynn is not yet. I would assume she may be here soon. Mary and Brian, very good. Barbara. To accept the minutes for the December 19th.
I second that.
All those in favor?
Aye.
We'll take the college first. We do have two resolutions that you had for us, so we'll take we'll entertain those by the time, shall we say.
First one is to change the resolution that was approved last year. We're going to expand the project. We originally put in just the library roof. We're going to extend it now for the amendment to do the Hardenburg part of the building. So, and that's the second resolution, is to establish that project too. So we have more needs quicker down there, so it's more appropriate.
So the first one is amending the resolution 547, establishing a capital project for Sony Ulster, the Wind Library replacement, to change the scope to include the roof assessment and design service for various buildings in Sony Ulster, right?
Absolutely.
All right. Anybody have any questions on it? Its adoption.
Make a motion to adopt.
Second. All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
All right, I'll send the other one also at the same time. We also have 112. Can you explain that one again?
We want to expand. The amendment was to expand the project, and this is.
Oh, that is the actual expansion. Oh, gotcha. That's the establishment. All right, any questions? No? Entertain a motion to accept the resolution. All in favor?
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Solid in the spring, and it will be the first time in a couple of years that we will not be asking for an increase in tuition. And from my colleague, we'll be the only one in the region that won't be asking for an increase. So we're very happy about that. And the one I'm most proud about is that our basketball team is going to nationals. First time since 1970 something. So.
Oh, yeah. That was, I think, back when I was in Jumpin' Joe Ewell was a player.
So, real proud. I went down to, and I saw the game. It was in Pennsylvania. It really was scrappy. It's so interesting to watch. They're playing against kids from the city. And a lot of the, my colleagues, no matter what's really interesting, the team that we beat is my best friend, is the president of that college. Coincidence, we just happened to be in the finals, so $10 bet I won.
All right, very good.
Up that credit.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, when you saw the team, you wouldn't have said that. But it was interesting because if you look at the teams that we played, all those students were recruited from all over the the states. If you looked at our team, there was Kingston, Sauger team, Rock Hill. These are local kids who actually level, which is unbelievable. The fact that now we're going to play
All righty, very good. I also want to ask you a question in reference to what last year we legislature completed a bus advertising policy for our buses, and it was something we worked on for quite a while. And I know that you advertise on some of the buses, and I'm not sure how your contract works on that. Maybe I'll get into that at another point. But what I wanted to do is, and I had some conversations with the county executive about this, and then I haven't really followed up with him recently, but I need to. You know, there's, you know, the opiate crisis, there are other issues that can come forth, and what I would, you know, a few years ago, I think it was about 4 years ago, we had a presentation by the Ellendale High School. They brought in posters and things like that that was made in reference to, you know, the opiate crisis, and there was other items that they went into, but the posters were unbelievable. Some of these things were really, really good. And, you know, one particular kid won, you know, that poster contest. But the problem is nothing happened to that after that. And things like that, if we can do that, buses on our buses, you know, possibly advertising, you know, use that as something to, you know, point out what the crisis is. And I think it, you know, would be by engaging the high schools and the community college. I think the community, it would be good for the community college to be the sort of the hub of it all. Because that's why you're also attracting students. So it's sort of like a win-win in a way. And I'd like to get more involved in this, and sometime maybe I'll talk to Mike about it over, and I'll maybe sometime this week. And I'm glad that Ken's here, because this way Ken, I could have a conversation with him too. You know, Ken's pretty insightful about things of this nature, and he's very good at putting things together. So he would probably end up being the point guy in the end.
I'm not. I know we talked about it briefly a year ago, maybe last June. I think before that. I know you had said something to Mike, but. I mean, we're obviously talking about it. I don't know if it's with the money we have to spend on advertising, I don't know if it's the most effective. I mean, it's, you know, we don't control the advertising on the buses in the city of Kingston. It's very much where I think it would be most effective at this point. But, you know, I can think of better ways to spend the dollars for the advertising that I would reach more target populations than having them run up and down 209 all day long. You know what I mean?
Right, but a lot of these buses, as you pointed out, they are, in other words, they're moving, it's basically moving billboard.
Yeah, but again, we tend to do a lot of work with the limited dollars that we have. We spend a lot of time in the schools with that type of advertising. I think that poster contest and just doing those in the schools
right.
than, you know, the buses per se.
Well, this is when my point was, is the idea of poster contest, and then it actually shows up when I wrote a bus wrap. Makes sense to me, and most of the people that I've talked to seem to think it would be a good idea in order from doing something like that. I mean, I just think that, you know, that it's a moving target, because, I mean, I've seen billboards in places, but that's one place. So, you know, by that billboard, you're not seeing it. Whereas a bus moves, you know, certain ones go from the city of Kingston, they run around the city, they actually run through the city, at least one of them, you know, a couple of them run through the city. And go out to the mall and things of that nature. They may be, another tape would probably be your targeted ones. And then if hopefully, I mean, I support the idea that the county is taking over the city buses anyway. Hopefully that is moving forward, but I don't know where it's at. So but that's another conversation. But anyway, this is, I just wanted to make you aware that I was, you know, going to have some more conversations on it.
We certainly be involved in any project like that. We'll be in our department. Internal poster contests here.
Right.
We've done those similar type activities, so, you know, knowing it's a crisis right now, I think it's something.
Right. And the reason I brought it up is because when I saw the Ellendale schools, you know, their students, what they did, it was really remarkable. Everybody, that, you know, they presented it to the Ulster County Legislature, and they were remarkable posters. I mean, very effective looking. You know, it's something that would affect a teenager, and that's the whole idea. You know, it's created by teenagers. And not only that, but what it's doing is involving a number of the students in each of the schools. So it's, in other words, it's bringing that involvement in, and then it turns into a poster, maybe the poster or the wrap. Isn't the part that is the most effective? Maybe just engaging the students is the most effective.
Conversation, right?
Chairman, but in the end, might add an idea, perhaps tying it into your family advocate.
I don't know if that's the right vehicle for that messaging, but we'll always talk about anything.
All right, very good. Any questions for the college before we let them escape? None? All righty.
Thanks, Taylor.
Thank you. All right, we have our audience. Introduce yourself, Carol.
Yes. For all of you that I haven't explained that, I am Linda Marcerita. I'm the executive director of Arts and Hudson. And we are serving as the ad hoc arts council here in Ulster County. And we've been doing this. I was looking at the records, and 2018 will mark the 10th anniversary of us doing this. And we have all seen the amount of arts organizations that have grown here, the positive effect it's had on this economy, as well as bringing in tourism. There's a lot of positive attributes. So we've been very, very grateful for the support, and I know that all of the people that have received funding have been very grateful for the support. I just put together a quick packet. It might be more like a little thank you note that you can take home and read, but it shows a lot of the impact that has happened in just from last year, 2017. The organizations that received this funding, it's small amounts, it's under $5,000, but it's really helps sustain those organizations. Most of the money goes towards capacity building, which is what it was originally designated for. So, for instance, the legislators at the very beginning of this 10-year term came up with an idea that there was no Arts Council, the Dutchess County Arts Council, which has now turned into Arts Mid-Hudson, had stepped in to do the NISCA re-granting, but other than that, there was no organization that was taking the lead on pulling all the arts organizations together and making sure that they continue to thrive. So the idea was that capacity building was extremely important. And so if you look at on page 7 of your packet, we have a printout of the organizations, the 12 organizations that received funding this past year and the amounts that they received. And you can see that everybody is very thoughtful. So, for instance, when UTAC was going through that huge renovation, that was millions and millions of dollars, they received a small $2,000 grant, but that helped them upgrade their equipment. And that equipment is the thing that keeps all of the servers going and turns on the air conditioning and all this. So that, it was a critical piece that they needed, and they have it now. And UPAC serves a lot of people and brings a lot of people into Ulster County. I won't go over all these. You can see there's anything from an expanded staff position, and that's part of the capacity get the organizations to the next level. So a lot of times if you have a part-time fundraiser or community organizer with a little bit of extra time on their paycheck, they can actually get out there and really do a good job. So these all kind of help boost that. 2 years ago, I spoke to the legislature and I asked if some of the money could be going towards programmatic support. Some of the organizations came to us with it. We just need basic support. And so we set a small portion, 30%, could go to that. This past year, I'd like to point out the Celebrating Shakespeare thing. They got $1,000. And that was for the Hudson Valley LGBTQ community. And it was incredible what they did with that $1,000. They had an art exhibit in their space, which if you haven't been to it, it's on Wall Street. It's a beautiful old bank, and so there was an artwork in there, and all the artwork had to do with Shakespeare and these letters that the artist had written to Shakespeare. What they took with that theme was they created programs for LGBTQ youth to come in and do writing with a trained person. They had several panel discussions on diversity. I mean, it was about a 2 month, every week there was something different going on. So that's exactly the type of program that the panel was so excited to see that, you know, this could be sponsored. So they're all very, very grateful. You can see the Shadowland website. If you had ever gone to that before, it was a little cluttered, and now they can sell tickets online. It's very streamlined. So these are all things that will help these organizations actually help themselves. And that's what this is.
Just for those people that were not aware, in 2008 news, we had a sort of a budget crisis, and we were cutting everything we could. Unfortunately, I had to be the chairman at the time, and it was, you know, really hurt me, the idea of cutting the arts, and all these things ended up being cut. So what we did, that was when we formed the idea that, because there were a lot of the things that were just, every year we gave the same amount of money to people. It was just another handout, and we felt that we needed to change the way we looked at that. And so we put the, we called, it was Dutchess County Arts then to oversee that for us, because there was no organization in Ulster County, and they stepped up to do that. And what we wanted to do was give them a set amount of money, but have a panel of artists decide where the money goes, instead of legislators deciding where the money goes, because if you've seen where some of the money went, it was kind of insane. Even at one point there, some of the money went towards a canned shoot of peasants for federated sportsmen. You know, where you can kill those peasants, you know, they send them out of a box, and then you can shoot them. I mean, that was a little crazy for arts. I mean, I understand maybe if you agree with that, that's fine if you want to fund it, but that was things that were being funded, and it was being funded. If you knew a legislator that had enough power to get the vote, you got funded. So we felt that it was much better if we're going to fund the arts to make sure it's actually the arts that are being funded, and being funded by a panel of artists that are the ones that make those decisions. None of us in this room, as legislators, have a say on these types of things right there. We have a say on the money, but we had the professionals doing it for us. And I think that makes sense. And like I said, it started in 2008, and we're still doing it that way. And as we pointed out, originally we did it for capacity building only. In other words, we didn't want to keep giving people money every year because we wanted them to build their capacity so they could do it on their own.
Right.
And some of these things that are not, some of the things that they funded are not being funded any longer because they stand on their own. Like, I think it's the Festival of the Voices, an example that got funded about $4,000 or $5,000 to start out, and now it's, I mean, they bring in, I don't know how many people they bring in now. But that was the mindset. So we did change it last year to allow some, you know, money to go towards just keeping a program going. Most of that's been done for educational purposes. So, you know, like for students that are coming in for certain art things because they may not be able to sustain themselves. So. Any questions?
Yeah, I have a question. What's the process for the application process that someone seeking funding for this?
Sure.
How does that work?
That's a great question. So right now we have already opened up the portal. We're calling for people to come to our work. We have application workshops, and we do a presentation on here's how to make the best application. We go over all of the guidelines to make sure if people have a question, ask the question there. Sometimes just sitting in a room, you know how it is, somebody will ask a question and you'll be, oh yeah, I wanted to ask about this. So it really, it's like a hive mind kind of thing. But we also offer one-on-one help. Like if people want to call us, we're in Ulster County frequently, so people can make appointments and we can come to you. So after the applications come in, and the deadline is the middle of this month, we will gather, it's an online application, so people can submit it through Submittable. And then we have gathered a group of community members in Ulster County to read and review all of the proposals. So that happens in a panel meeting. And so the panelists come together after they read everything. They we go through each proposal one by one. The panelists, we give a, one panelist takes the lead for each one. So and then everybody gets to comment. So after the comments are gathered, all of the panelists will then rank the proposal. So essentially it's like a rank ordered list at the end of the day. And a lot of times panelists will read these on their own, and we have a broad community group that comes in. So there might be somebody in there that has an expertise in visual art, somebody that might be a performance expert, somebody, you know, so we have a broad group of people. And so sometimes panelists will read this and they'll think, well, after I listen to that expert, I'm a dancer, but after I heard that expert on visual art, I'm going to give this a higher score. So at the end of the day, we have a rank-ordered list, and then we ask the panelists to do a very difficult thing, you know, is to assign the amount of money that we have to each thing. So each person will ask for certain amounts of money, and almost always people will ask for the most you can possibly ask for. And we tell them, we don't have that big of a pot of money. You know, if you are collaborating with another community group or you're doing something together, you might get a much higher amount because, you know, it's two people working together. We like to see that. So after that meeting is over, that list gets approved by the panel. Then that list goes to the Artsmith-Hudson Allocation Committee. And that's filled with our board members. So our board members, we have... At this point, we have 50% from Ulster County and 50% from Dutchess County. That allocation committee looks at it to make sure that it was all fair and equitable and done according to the guidelines. And then after they approve it or not, or if they make some adjustments, then that goes to our full board, and then our full board votes on that. And then at that point, we notify the applicants. So it's kind of multi-layered. Yeah. We want to make sure that it really is fair. And, you know, almost always people ask for a certain amount of money and we can't give them that much. But it's doled out very carefully.
Any other questions? Anybody can ask a question if you want to.
I'm sorry if I went on too much about that. We're actually really proud about, I guess, the process that we have set up. It's not very sexy, but it is very fair and accurate.
And just for the members of that are new, we have been, you know, each year we have been moving you know, the arts contributions up a little bit each time. We've been trying to move it back, you know, sort of getting it back to 2008 level even. We're not at that level, to be honest with you. But having said that, we are moving it slowly at a time. So, anyway, I entertain a motion to accept the Resolution 18, which is the funding of the Mid-Hudson Arts.
Second.
Already, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you all for your support and all of reporting back in with good news.
Thank you.
And when they actually do the awards, she will let us know. And if you want to go to the awards ceremony, it's usually a very nice event, and you know it's really good because we're giving money away, and so everybody's happy.
It's a love fest.
Thank you. Alrighty, we have Casa and Puck Nelson.
Hi.
That is you. Okay, very good.
So my name is Brooke Nelson. I'm a director in May, and we just recently celebrated our 30 years in service.
charging people to do, and we really appreciate that. So for those that don't know, our organization is fully made up of volunteers who are assigned to abuse and neglect cases. So we're appointed by the three family court judges to cases they feel would really benefit from an extra set of eyes and ears. So our volunteers go in and meet with their case at least once a month and communicate with teachers, any medical providers, caretakers, to make sure we're getting a whole idea of the needs of these children and any services as well that they need. We're making sure that the current placement is safe and appropriate. So, you know, just recently we've had a child receive special education services that he wasn't receiving before. We advocated for another child who needed therapy services that he received. A lot of these children have dealt with, all of them have dealt with trauma. A lot of times these kids are misdiagnosed and receiving a category of an attention deficit disorder or some type of emotional disability when most of the time it's actually a trauma. And so a trauma screening needs to take place. And so we advocate for that. A grandfather of ours received child care assistance because of something we advocated for, and then also another 17-year-old received medical care when needed. So we go in and we make sure that these kids are, that their needs are being met, and that their place is safe and appropriate, and that they're placed in a permanent home as quickly as possible. So part of that, too, is finding out a concurrent plan. So, meeting with other adults in this child's life, are they open to being a permanent placement? So that if for some reason the parent doesn't do what they need to do to get their kid back, and the foster placement they're currently in doesn't want to adopt, we have easily have a backup plan, and there's no time lapse. So since May, since I came on board, we recruited 24 new volunteers. 8 of those are currently in training. I'm in my third round of trainings right now. And we've been appointed in November to 12 more cases. So we're really moving and shaking. We received a grant recently to purchase duffel bags. It's our overnight bag project. A lot of these kids come into care with duffel or with plastic bags. And so that's a project we're working on, and we'll be delivering those to children in the foster agencies and the both Kids Peace and Harvard Light and the Department of Social Services. And we also brought together a committee to work on brainstorming how we can really work with these youth that are aging out of the system and connecting them with transition services in the area. So that's been going really, really great.
How many total new volunteers do you have now?
So total new...
total volunteers.
Oh, volunteers total. So we have 30.
30, okay. Yes. So that allows you to, actually see 30 kids, basically, because each volunteer is only for one child.
For one case.
And I know the program quite well.
Yeah.
I mean, I have advocated for this program in the past when it was going to be cut. And cutting this program would be probably one of the more asinine things to do. Because all they had to do is keep one child out of what I refer to as a reform school placement, and you just saved $130,000 a year. I mean, because the cost for that type of placement is unbelievably expensive. So, and your typical type of volunteer is what? Give us a picture of your typical volunteer.
Yeah, very, very, very diverse. This last group, we had a United Airlines pilot. We had a retired social worker. We had a retired domestic violence attorney. We had a business, a couple business owners. We had a retired nurse. So it's a very diverse group. I would say the majority of them have a bachelor's degree or higher. You know, we used to have a lot, I would say maybe a year ago, a lot of them were retired individuals, but I've been really focusing on bringing a more diverse and younger group. So I would say the average age now is probably, I would say it's early 30s, when before it was, I think, like I said, more 50s and 60s, so, yeah.
I know a few years ago you had a, one of the volunteers was the person that was the head of foster care in Orange County in California. She was when she was the head of that, and she retired and she moved to the area and she ended up being a volunteer there. So basically, she probably had I don't know how many people she had working under. I'm talking Orange County, LA, and you know, huge. So, I mean, they have mostly professionals in the odds. I don't know if anybody wants to ask any questions.
You asked the question I was going to ask about volunteers. I wonder how many kids you're dealing with. Did you have a sense of overall?
Yeah, so last year we served 53 children.
Are you meeting the need, or that's just... that's just what you can address?
That's what we can address because of the number of volunteers. So that's what this is really going to help. I mean, right now I've doubled the size of our program. I'm looking to keep on going here. So a lot of this, so this money is going to personnel-related salaries, about 42% of our budget a year. Payroll taxes, training, supplies, insurance, occupancy, advertising, communication, postage. So, yeah.
Yeah, we increased this last year too. So they could get more volunteers because you have to train them because the courts have to accept them and want them.
Right.
And the court is the one that appoints the volunteer. And just for a point of information, their mindset is the child is the most important person in this case. They don't care if they step on social services' toes. They don't care if they step on the attorney's toes if they have to. Their mindset is the child and what is best for that child in the end. And that's why they're volunteers. And that's the whole mindset of this program. And it's a great program. And I'd like to, if anybody does have any questions, I'd like to entertain a motion to accept Resolution 17. Goldman?
Second.
Eckert? Community action, and then with community action, we also have a couple of resolutions appointing people to keep an eye on you.
That's good.
Of
course,
just kidding.
We just passed around our most recent.
All righty, go ahead, Greg. Introduce yourself quickly.
Hi, I'm Greg Howard. I'm the executive director of Community Action, and I've been in this position now a year and a half. And I was at the last legislative meeting when I first started. This really is focused on one of the resolutions I can, I believe, is a lot of money goes to help heat and rental assistance for people of Foster County. Community Action has been serving the residents of Foster County now for 53 years in August. We've created many programs that have come out of Community Action that you are well aware of, RUFCO, Legal Services of the Hudson Valley, Resource Center for Accessible Living, all started within our four walls down Rosalie Avenue. We served last year about 8,200 individuals in our outreach services program, which this is where the money is going towards, which equates to about 6,500 families. In the HEAT program, our three outposts, which are in Highland, Ellenville, and Sixton, served about 950 families that assisted Ulster County and the HEAT services within Ulster County originally served to do that through this grant. To allow people not having to go to social services to file for their HEAT services. In Ellenville, we also help out with SNAP services. Like that because of the distance, transportation problems, whatnot. But it's a full service agency. We have the Head Start program and the Early Head Start program throughout Ulster County. We also have just entered into the Saugerties, Cahill, the extended pre-K that opened February 1st. So we're going to start with one classroom of Head Start. We have two located in the Cahill building now, not our post office, our post road office. And just recently, we have been for the last 6 months serving the residents of Sulphur County as well from a community action standpoint. We closed the community action patch out there about 6-8 months ago, and the state has issued us temporary assignment of the outreach services. So emergency food, pantry, clothing, mass distribution, rental assistance, utility assistance, and building relationships with that community as well, like we've done here. And hopefully, within the next few weeks, we will hear about a permanent RFA to apply and hopefully get assigned dual counties at that point. We also provide weather rotation services and NYSERDA and power services, usually for the 125% of poverty level individuals in their homes, trailers, multiple dwellings, things like that, to do energy efficient upgrades, stoves, furnaces, insulation, windows, doors. And we service probably the weatherization between 50 and 70, depending on the funding, homes within Ulster County. And NYSERDA would be a power program. We can do between 30 and 50, depending on what the services are.
Any questions? It's great to see you again, Greg, and I know you do a great job down there. I have nothing but good things about you, and therefore I'll probably be on your board. So
that's what I'm hearing. I just have that word today.
So you will have a couple of people. In fact, there's a few people in here. Lynn is also going to be on it.
Nice to meet you.
And so what I'd like to do is first entertain a motion to accept Resolution 19, which is the resolution for the appropriation of the money from the legislature. By Laurel, seconded by Walt. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Another resolution in reference to appointing and reappointing members to the Ulster County Legislature, Ulster County Community Action. It is a require because it is a special recognized program, Community Action. I think it's the only federal recognized program for, I'm trying to think of what the terminology is that it's used.
Tripartite board.
What's that?
Tripartite board set up.
Right. So, the board is set up, but, it's a federally recognized program, Community Action, and that's why you see them throughout the nation. And it's meant to help out, shall we say, the less fortunate. And that's basically what the charge is. Anyway, there is a Resolution 74. The chairman of the legislature is...
I just want to say, I never saw these laid out side by side like this before in all the years I've been here. And I just wanted to express a concern that I have. I see that one of the legislators, Phil Maloney, it's listed in his place of business and not his residence as his address. And everyone else is that. It's only a one to correct that or not. But secondly, I mean this with due respect, but you just passed a resolution that you provides money, and this committee provides direct oversight of the agency. I don't know how members of this committee can be on the board of an agency that you're providing direct oversight to. I think there's not a direct conflict of interest. It certainly gives the impression of one. So I just wanted to put that on the record. I know I try to say the legislative concerns as this matter is, but this just kind of strikes me as an odd. I don't know if you want to think about it or speak to counsel about the potential ethics issues here.
That sounds like sound advice.
I know this is a matter of legislative concern. We try not to. I've never seen them laid out side by side on this before.
And in a way, it's probably good that they are, because you've taken note that we're both on the program, on the committee giving money.
I mean, normally, if you I noticed that, Mr. Donaldson, you're not listed as a sponsor of this, I think, because maybe those concerns, but the one you just passed,
right.
You can't modify the contract without permission of the chair of the committee.
Yeah,
so you're on a board that would then be. You know, consenting to a modification of again, it's a speech system issue. I want to leave it at that.
There are optics and there's the smell test. Any metaphor you want to use, it might be good to just step
right. Out. Right. No. I certainly understand what you're talking about. I know that it does require legislators. You know, they require by their board to have like an official legislators and they have legislators and. City officials on that board, and in the end, no matter how you look at it, I know what you're saying, but in the end, I would have to vote on, I think goes to the floor or comes out of the committee, every legislator is going to be required to vote on.
Can I add something to that, Sue?
Yep.
A lot of the legislators have representatives that are acting on their behalf, so the actual person yourself would not be at the table.
Right.
And that person that's voting is the elected one to the board. Represents. I think Sari's had that with Chris Allen. They had done a packet. Carl Bonfiglio, representative at one point. So people have and that might have gotten some of that discussion.
I recall Carl recusing himself from votes in the action to support the legislature. I just recall that from the past. But I think they even deal with that on a case by case basis. Again, just the direct oversight is the thing that has got my.
Has there ever been an instance in the past where someone has sat on legislative programs which funds you, or at least goes to the process authorized to fund you, and has sat on the board? So that's occurred before.
He sits on the cooperative board, and they require somebody from the legislature on there. They actually want somebody from the committee, and then they, Wayne Harris, of course, was on the chair of this committee.
I've never seen him outside by side.
Right.
No, Wayne Harris chaired the committee and was the chairman of Community Action at the same time.
But you're not saying that it's a problem because they're laid out side by side. You're saying if they were not.
I'm saying that I cheated.
And you hadn't seen it that way before, but it doesn't mean that it didn't exist before.
That's right.
No, it definitely existed.
I wouldn't want anyone to get in trouble, that's all.
Right.
No, it definitely existed before. I know that. Yeah, but I don't know if we got to. I mean, we could certainly postpone this and have a discussion with. They need a committee. That's their problem.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Do you have a timeline? Like, if we were to postpone.
We've been without the legislators since January 1st.
And so, if we postpone for another month, would that put you in a bad situation?
Yes, it can, because I don't have really that full. I only have Jim Noble,
right.
Who is from the legislature. I need three more. And we thought we would get it last month, but
right.
I missed the selection for that.
Right.
And I don't know what the grant terms the federal or state grants will say about it, but it's a hole right now. And it's a big hole, because that's really what Community Action is all about, is the community involvement. And part of it is having legislators, low-income individuals, and private party people that come in and sit on things.
Well, we could pass it and then get an everything, and then
I'm not really ready to move on it, to be honest with you. I'd rather bring it in front of ethics just for an opinion.
And if we
look very conflicting to me,
and I'm on ground work,
get up here.
I've never seen the funding and the board.
That means, let it go in front of a board for review, and if they come back with an opinion, so be it. But if it goes before the board for review and it comes back, and let's say the review is something to the effect like, well, you can be on the board, but you have to appoint a representative. You can't directly be on that board and voting. right, which I think has happened in the past, is essentially what you're telling me. As Jim explained to me.
Well, it's happened. I mean, like I said, Wayne Harris actually chaired the board of community action and was the chairman of this committee. I oversaw it.
So you're talking about somebody taking your place.
Yes.
But I still think it's the same.
It would be. It would be essentially.
Yeah, it's still the same thing. Yeah, it's not changing the mindset of it.
But let's say.
But I mean, you know, for ethics, just for a point of information, normally when they deal with ethics, is are you getting a financial benefit from it?
No,
or your family. Yeah, it's a conflict of interest, but I mean...
The approval of the funds, that's a conflict.
What's that?
Approval of the funding, that makes it, in my opinion, a conflict. If we were to take it to the ethics, and then the ethics hands down a decision, whatever it is, let's just say the decision is we shouldn't serve.
Well, you'll get an opinion, I think.
Yeah. Or it says we should, it doesn't matter, we should. Whatever it is, are we able to act in lieu of meeting again, so that he can get what he needs.
Meeting.
We'd have
to
call
a special meeting.
Fast, right?
Pretty good, but
like probably
the next meeting,
month.
So he has to figure out when they meet. You know.
So yeah. He would be without a board for another month.
I have 9 members.
Uh-huh.
And we should be at 12. It used to be 15. Mm-hmm. And when I came on board, when people fell off, and they just fell off in each category, I knocked it down to 12 to get more control back to working with the board as opposed to having large numbers.
Sure.
And so we're starting back at a smaller number right now and building back up as we grow. So.
Well, is there a way to modify this resolution that will approve Joe Maloney with the correct address and Kevin Roberts and leave off temporarily Dave's and Lenny's name on this? At least that you build up the board.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have an objection.
Well, it's an opinion from the
My gut tells me is that the ethics board would say, well, you have to recuse yourself from folks pertaining if you're on the board, right? You know, but again, you've got to separate, it's all one of the same.
Legislature as a whole approves funding to this. Right. So it doesn't matter necessarily that Maloney doesn't serve on this committee. It's still legislature as a whole approving funding going towards.
I would suspect you'd want to recuse himself from the board.
I just really feel like we need an opinion on it, just to protect us and the appearance of it.
I think that's fair. That's a safe way to play it.
I've never seen them laid out, and it just struck me.
Yeah, good eye, Ken.
You know,
but it does make sense to it would be complicated and become muddied is the point that someone just raised, which is Joe has to, if he's appointed, even though he's not on this particular committee.
Doesn't matter. It's the legislature.
He's still voting, and you know, so the whole structure of the tripartite committee then would be suspect if. Anyone on the legislature,
I would expect him to recuse himself if he was voting on money that was coming. Just like today, I don't see a problem with you voting on the first 18 motion because they're not members of the board. So whatever's coming out of this committee today from what we talked about before, the law people, the legislative people, I would say that's not a problem because I have not elected you to my board yet. And in fact, I just found out a couple hours before I got here who the names were.
Right.
Because I haven't seen this motion yet.
So currently there are no members of the legislature appointed to your board?
Jim Noble is the only remaining one.
But he's from the city council.
Yeah, I have 4. Carl Baviglio, Chris Allen, who had Don Hackett sitting in for him, and Peter Lawford.
Okay. And I think Pete had someone sitting in for him.
No, he actually came.
He came.
Yeah.
Hector was telling me that he...
No, he had...
There's people that have had a lot of sit-ins.
He had Armstrong as his appointee.
No, he's been coming since I've been here.
Oh, so I think that must have happened.
Might have been before.
You got here.
George
Armstrong. He appointed George Armstrong.
So do we need to also then think about the other appointees as part of the legislature? So there's really no distinction between us voting here on the committee and even appointing Joe. We can't really even split it in half and say, we'll give you Joe, but we'll wait for...
Okay, 25 years of that constraint, unfortunately. Again, you have the issue either way. Certainly, as a member of the body, if it's minimal, you want to accuse yourself, right? But then it's the direct oversight role that really has to be done.
Right. So, I mean, it's tough because we don't want to harm you. At the same time, you know, we do have ethics obligations, and we should be clear about them. And, you know, it might potentially be problematic if we went ahead with this and then we face its issues later on.
Maybe a statement, if that doesn't go today, that I can present in April, the second Thursday, that would just say, what is happening?
Okay.
And what is the struggle going on? So at least I have something to show the grant individuals that we're working towards it. Sitting idle.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I mean, so in reality, though, still would be able to appoint Maroney, Roberts, and Noble from the city. Oh, that's right. Well, he has to be reappointed for January. I think he's just continuous of office. I think he's just there because he got elected there. So I don't know. We have him listed on our appointment list here, but. The idea that both Lynn and I are directly on the committee that oversees it, then we seem to have a larger conflict, shall we say. I mean, even though I know it's been done all the time, like you're on Cornell, I think you're on the library, right? You have something to do with libraries, so right now...
You're on the trustees and you'll be potentially funding for the library.
And you're on the direct, so I mean, and I think it's been, you know, like I said, that it was a typical thing that was been done in the past.
Do they recuse themselves when it comes up for a vote?
Normally, people just recuse themselves. Yeah,
I recall Carla Filio recusing himself on the vote for these dollars in the past.
And anything having to do with the library?
Also, the County Library Association not directly against the library.
Okay, you're okay. But I didn't realize that. Of all the member initiatives that you all find, that you actually have to pull up members of the board
among
the agencies.
I mean, the problem is that it sounds like the potential conflict wouldn't be just narrowed in on the situation. You're raising an issue that's actually far more pervasive and had been unnoticed.
Yeah. I apologize. I've never seen them laid out. Money and board at the same time.
It implicates many of us actually at the table. It's not, I mean, we might be some.
I mean, if there's certain parameters that are set through the ethics board or whatever,
that's what they normally do.
Then so be it, so long as they're explicit and everybody knows their role and whether they need to recuse themselves.
Right. Well, they would have to recuse themselves, both Roberts and Maloney, but I really think in order to save his problems with granting, if we had those two added in, and then we can see about the others and we can have a further discussion on that. Bring this up before the the ethics board and find out if it's okay. I mean, I didn't until you brought it up. I really didn't think about it, but it certainly makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that's my point. Yeah. If
I wasn't sitting here, we wouldn't have thought about it. I mean, I wouldn't have thought about that.
I think the chairman of my board is on the ethics.
I don't think it's going to do us any harm to just say, okay, let's review it, let's get an opinion.
No, I don't think it is either.
And if we can get Joe through and...
Joe, Kevin, what we'd like to do is strike Lynn and myself for the time being. I know that that's the way it's been in almost all cases. Like, for instance, you've been on the community, in fact, you served as the liaison. And I know others have done that. Like I said, Wayne Harris was the chairman of your board.
You know, I chairman of the issue with Steve Kingston when we were dealing with reforming the ethics, and it came down to how broadly or narrowly you define conflict of interest. And one of the reasons why we had to more narrowly define it was because it's small, and you have the same people circulating around. So what's going to ride on it?
Definition. I think the direct oversight is what kind of. And again, I also did just know that the addresses are correct on this one.
And that would be clear.
All right, so I'd entertain a motion to strike Eckerd and Donaldson from the appointment with the idea that we further review this. Correct the address for Joe Maloney to the his home address.
Motion.
Okay, entertained by Eckerd.
Maybe I shouldn't even motion.
I'm sorry.
You don't want to say I'm going
to drill down.
I'm still hung up on them being on the legislature in general.
But they require legislators to be on it.
I know.
And it's a federal program that they'll every one of their grants will be put in question.
No.
It's, yeah, I mean, it calls into question
he has quorum, though, without these legislators, correct?
Yes, I have quorum.
But he's worried about funding. Do you have a deadline on a grant coming up?
I have a grant that I have to submit now, which doesn't really look too much of a board, but the other grant will be in the fall.
I think we have a little bit of time.
Okay. The safe thing to do would be to ask for an ethics opinion on the whole matter, and then you're covered, right?
So you can survive?
I can. What would be great is if I could get
a letter
this discussion just showing we're in this process so I can add it to my board to let people know. I have to educate them about that.
All right, so you can make sure that he gets a copy of the minutes, send them directly to Greg.
If there's no time concerns, then there's no harm in being.
No doubt. I entertain a motion to withdraw that amendment.
I withdraw it.
All right. Who else withdraws it? Who else was going to second that? Jim and Jim withdrew. So we withdrew the amendment, and we're going to postpone this until we get a reading from the ethics board. All right. This could open up a serious channel.
But I do thank you for the amazing services that you provide to our community. It's an excellent resource. So we're very grateful to have you.
Oh, yeah, whenever you do a quarter of...
So we're going to redo that whole building.
All right, you come back. Don't come back starting trouble again either next time. All righty, and we have a Cornell Cooperative Extension, and it is a fine, but that is the this is the first meeting that I have been at that the I have not seen the last executive director. So introduce yourself as.
I'm Jared Bona. Took over as executive director in January. I'm originally from Socrates. I grew up on a small farm. I was a 4-H'er. And I've been living around the world. In fact, I just moved back from India to take over the position. I'm a hydrologist by training and look forward to bringing some of that to our programming. Excited to be back. If you don't know Cooperative Extension, does everybody know it? I find I have to explain extension often, which is a failing on our part, but everybody knows how it works? Part of the land grant? Okay. So we have a broad range of programs, as broad as the research that Cooperative does. Main areas are environments, 4-H youth developments, health communities and families, and agriculture. And since I'm so new, I brought some backup. Christian Malzowski is our, he's the agriculture program lead, and Melinda Urza is our healthy communities program lead, just in case there were some questions I didn't answer tonight. The funding that you're looking at here is really important for us to help to provide salaries for our professional educators. It allows us to be a bit nimble instead of right now, for every dollar you give us, we bring about 11 more in outside funding from 30 different sources, grants and contracts. But your funding is really important because not everybody likes to fund salaries. And this allows us to address things like emergency issues. So with that, it's mostly the salaries of people like these, and you mentioned opioids. We have a relatively parent program, which has been addressing the opioid crisis for a long time, because the families that get devastated by this crisis, parents are not in fiction, we're dealing with addictions. We've got aunts and uncles and grandparents raising children. So this gives them an opportunity to sort of, you know, have the resource and learn more. Parents take it from a different angle. And without having to always follow the chase down the grant cycle, like, open, is everybody gearing up to do more open-ended work? We can now partner with the county agencies in a more rapid manner because this funding allows us to hire the educators. For example, we just started a new parenting program that works with the parents dealing with addiction. What's the title of that?
Sober Parenting Journey. It's a 14-week program working with parents that have recently, you know, had the addiction, but they have something that was over 30 days. And they've come forward parenting training for 14 weeks. It's a very small program, very intense. And it helped them maintain their giving up their addiction and learning new parenting skills, which is really important to keeping children in their home.
Is it OASIS approved or recognized by the state? Or
it's an evidence-based program. Mm-hmm. Our educators went through very long training for it. It's also recognized around the nation. There's also the parenting journey. This is the sober parenting journey. So the parenting journey is also purposed in Foster County. This one is specifically designed to address parents that have an addiction.
Any other programs that you didn't know more about?
There's do you have a brochure, right?
Yeah.
For the sober parenting journey?
For all your programs. You have something together at some point.
Yeah.
Because we do have what happens is a lot of this, they actually leverage money from others, the money that we give them. They would not be able to leverage that without it. And how many people, employees you have now? How many people work full time?
29 staff.
29?
Yeah.
That's your full time staff, and then you,
Not everyone's full time on that. There's some part timers in there.
Okay. Any questions? I'll entertain a motion to accept resolution 20, authorizing the chairman to enter into an agreement with Cornell Cooperative Extension.
Motion.
All righty. Eckert and Wolf. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Can you guys keep an eye on you, Mary?
I'm hoping that you all do. I'm going to. If I can, come around and meet everyone.
Yes, you know what we'd like to do is either the next meeting or the meeting after that. We typically have a meeting at Cornell Cooperative. We try to do that, and that way you can give us the programs and what you're doing and all that. So that would be nice. I don't know if we'll allow Mary to come.
That is correct.
Yeah, so what are you doing?
We're seeing very small scale. Mostly the people that have been in contact with me aren't justices. So with this area, we still really have just Casey Lafosh up at the YMCA in Houston. It has a small urban plot, but now she works with that on Wise property. So she has sort of circumnavigated some of the zoning issues that are arise. Right now, I think something that's kind of hampering people is that the city of Kingston is still looking at how best to tackle zoning issues and ordinances that, you know, are in place for, like, if someone does want to have an operation in their backyard, what's the nuisance level on that, what can they have, what can't they have, you know, like, if we just have, you can have your right to farm, then you've got someone with a whole bunch of chickens in the backyard that are 10 feet away from another house. I don't know why I'm seeing it in other like surrounding county areas that probably haven't really addressed the issue of the urban agriculture either, but I just, you know, that's where it's starting to appear. I don't know if it's a slow movement up from city, and it's just, you know, coming county by county before it gets up to here. I have worked with the capital area team up in Albany, and there's not really much going on up there either. I mean, it's there to get the proximity between city and suburbs there, so it's been up here, but not in the scale that you think you would see it. So, like I said, it just maybe a slow migration coming up.
So, most of the new small farmers are not in the cities.
Yes, it's evolved, but we're getting here. There are new urban or there are new agriculture ventures are small scale, where a lot of them are under 7 acres or 5 acres, 2 acres, but they're in the surrounding areas still allow some of that right to farm, and they haven't had this, you know, those areas haven't had to really tackle the ordinances that they have in the town. And the people, we know, can get their small operations going relatively safely. Some of them even purchase property 2 acres that is in the ag district already, so it really helps them along.
So you let me know when, either next month or the month after, when you would be able to entertain that.
I'd rather have you guys come soon. I'd love to spend more time with you. Next month sounds great to me.
All right, next month it'll be then. Hmm? Next month it'll be. At your place at 6:30.
Yes.
Okay, with you?
What's the design between a small, you know, family little garden, couple of different, and urban outside? Where is the?
It's typically production. So with a farm, with a small family garden, even a large family garden, you're looking at, you're producing things for the family, and that actually give it away. And the whole urban agriculture thing is the idea that you are sourcing food locally and you're selling it.
Okay.
So you're actually in production for business rather than just for yourself.
I know, say in the city of Kingston, I live in uptown. I know people with chickens in their backyard, and I know a few people have goats in their backyard.
Yeah.
So it's there. You know, there have been obviously complaints. And I think there's a lot of omission in the village more than
complaints?
Nah.
Thank you. All righty, we have another resolution, which is authorizing the chairman to execute a grant with required insurances for Medicare Improvement for Patients and Providers Act. You can fill us in on that.
I'm sure this is a small amount of dollars, about $15,000 that we received at the Office for the Aging. I do Medicare outreach, primarily along Part D, which is your pharmacy benefits, and general preventive measures through Medicare. Sellers that we're not well eligible for because of the role that you're most returning. It funds a cadre of part-time staff that meet with seniors to counsel them on available Medicare benefits.
Entertain a motion to accept Resolution 110. Move by Laurel, seconded. Ready, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
That's right.
Already, and why we're signing that, I just want to get maybe you could give us a quick update on the Meals on Wheels. Now, are they doing, they're not doing any daily, or is it just a weekly?
Yeah, actually, our program, we're really so proud of our program. We give seniors choice. We provide options to seniors where they can have daily hot delivery, or they can choose to have weekly delivery of a food package to shelf stable.
Because what happened was I had something golden, you know, and somebody there advised somebody that was in there that was going home.
Mm-hmm.
And they were advised that they could only get the meals that are once a week. They get like a set of frozen meals. They cannot. They can't get it daily.
It's not true. It's not true, Dave.
Okay. Well, no. That's why I. Yeah, that's
no,
why I asked.
That said, and quickly, there are. We have a monthly caseload of about 300, but we serve about 8,000 meals a month. And plus, we also quickly we always looking to maximize the available dollars, and we provide additional food. You know, there's a snow day, so really good for the next year. And we'll provide a frozen meal when they get the hot meals. They know we're not coming on a Sunday. Or we'll make sure that our most vulnerable seniors get extra meals on a Friday to get through the weekend. I mean, let's be honest, it's a 600-calorie meal. It's not the full supplement to their food. The food is just a byproduct of bigger program that's meant for contact and outreach to seniors, right? So the home delivered meals are really, we require that for certain members of our certain of our clients that we know are all alone up in the mountains and we're the only person that sees them every day. We don't give them the option of a weekly delivery. But the lifestyles of seniors is changing dramatically. They're a lot more active and outgoing, and they don't want to sit around between the hours of 11 and 1 waiting for their little 600 calorie meal to be delivered. They prefer to get the medication. So we give them as much options as we can, but we spend a lot of time focused on kind of the 90 to 100 people in our caseload, quite frankly, that we're all they have. Where we actually, what our program does that no other program I'm aware of in the state does, is we actually back county dollars in our program to do supplemental work. And we actually have a caseworker that goes and spends time with our most vulnerable seniors. And actually, quite often people in this caseload go in and out of the hospital. We actually are able to, because it's our dollars and not federal dollars, if it's federal dollars, when they go in the hospital, you have to close the case. And then we open them back. If we provide some supplemental county money, we actually go with them to the hospital, and we're involved in the discharge planning coming out of the hospital.
Yeah.
So we make sure that all the supports are there. And so it's something we do. I'm not aware of another town in the state that does it. Mm-hmm. Dave will know the history, and this may be Mary too, but for newer legislators, about 4 years ago now, Dave, right? So we used to contract with a firm out of Clifton Park. When you do these quite frankly, it's hard to get a firm that has enough presence and enough financial stability to actually support a program of this size. For example, Community Action is an example of a program that tries to provide you with this. They just don't have the kind of the strength to carry a program. This is a multi-million-dollar program. So, at the time, the person that won the bid was a commercial kitchen that does work in other counties out of Clifton Park, New York. And they had a local kitchen here at the setup at Tech City. And they would prepare meals and deliver out of Tech City. And about 4 years ago now, I called David, they gave us an ultimatum. You know what? The trend is to go to weekly delivery only, and we're out of business. Screw you guys, right? At the time,
yeah, we just throw it.
And to be honest with you, I had a lot of hard talks with the current director of OFA back then, and literally, the plan was brought to the county council, and we said, no, not what we're going to do. So we developed something that I think is really neat. Again, it preserves that daily contact, especially for those that we know that really need it. It provides that flexibility that we weekly delivery, because we know people that are more mobile and go out quite a bit more. And again, that wraparound case management, which I know no one else has got. So I'm proud of it. You may want to do something. I know you have a good field trip. Maybe we can do this up at Gateway, who's the current provider. Maybe we can do it up in the kitchen if you're interested. I'll get to feed you. Quickly, I'm a stickler for stuff, right? But people even know me that I care greatly about this risk. I test people. From time to time, I call and I have a good
reason.
Yeah. I have hot and cold meals delivered to my office, usually
you.
On a quarterly basis. They hate it when I do it.
Yeah.
And I taste it, and I make the staff taste it.
Yeah.
If you ever go to the freezer in the county office, you'll see that there's one or two meals sitting there. But it's what I do.
Good. That's our most vulnerable right there.
This is such an, again, the food, quite frankly, doesn't mean anything.
That was my concern, because I got somebody advised me what happened was their mother was getting out of Golden Hill, 90 years old, and she's, in other words, not very stable, and she only has somebody that shows up one hour or so a day to help her out, and so they advised her at Golden Hill that the only way that she can do was the only thing they had was a weekly delivery of meals. And I said, well, I don't think that's true, but I will certainly check on it. And I need to call you to talk to you. And that's why I was talking to when the name was up. I was in the middle of doing a bunch of work at my place I own. And then they said, well, put that on. So I make sure I ask.
Yeah, so it's an option for seniors, and truth be told, there are certain seniors who don't give an option to.
Right.
And,
but
No, because I know it very well. The mindset is really the contact. In other words, you're coming in, it's one more person. You know, even if they ask somebody, it's another person showing up to see that everything's okay.
You know, we manage this thing a lot differently than it was back in the day. I mean, back in the day, if you wanted to get on the meals program, you got on the meals program. Right now, we really look at financial eligibility just for those neediest people. And consequently, there's a lot of private meal delivery options available. A couple of good vendors, one on you called Square, for a modest sum, you can get delivery. So we'll refer seniors there, or a lot of the various healthcare agencies, because of the whole Medicaid redesign, provide that as an option. With private vendors, but do a good job of, you know, carrying on as well. The basic play that I hear is, you know, portions are too small, or it doesn't taste good. And the reality is you literally, it's so regulated by the federal government that the beef portion is exactly 4 ounces cooked, right? You know, it looks kind of small. So that's, you know, but I program them. I'm doing all this. I go out and I taste this food. So when someone calls in the blends, I say, you know what, I tasted it. Salt.
No,
I like to salt in it.
No, I've had it before. I've tasted them purposely myself. So I mean, they're not bad. It's not, you know, you're not eating at a fine French restaurant. Don't get me wrong, but it's certainly
It's 600 calories.
Right.
It has no seasoning whatsoever. But that's done by regulation and federal design. And I wish I could, you know, spend the money the way that I would like to spend the money, but unfortunately. Us accepting this money, we have to spend it the way the federal government wants us.
Right. No creme brulee.
No creme brulee.
But no, but you know what? We have real potatoes. There's no list of potatoes in our meal.
There you go.
The current director is
Yeah, let's go there potatoes. One day, too. That would be nice.
We definitely will. Well, we're going to have more cooperative and then I'll coordinate with Ken.
I'm not sure how late they're there, but I'll make sure I can do it.
Yeah.
Well, we could possibly meet earlier.
I mean, it's 30
Oh, we got it.
You could do one a little earlier, maybe better.
Does anybody have a problem meeting earlier?
There was one issue I want to raise, and I can raise this later on, but until the end of the semester, which would be the May meeting, I have class from 5 to 6:15 on Monday and Wednesday. So that doesn't mean you have to rearrange the meeting for me, but if it's on Monday, I can't make it until May.
Oh, okay. So,
the last one I think was on a Tuesday. This is on a Monday. I happen to be on spring break right now.
Right, right. It's typically Monday, right?
I don't know how you want to handle it.
Well, what time do you get out? 6:15
My class in Poughkeepsie is done at 6:15. So that would be whatever it takes from there to here. And that, you know, Jim's given me a nasty look over there. So I don't know what that means, and that might be something I just have to work out on my own. I just wanted to throw it out there.
Gotcha. We'll figure it out. I don't know if anybody has a problem with meeting at 7 or something of that nature.
Last time was on Tuesday.
That was unusual. That was because of a different setup.
This is March. It would be really eight, and it probably wouldn't even be May because we're out by the next time this meets. So it would be one meeting that I miss.
All right. Well, we can probably.
And there might be something I can do.
Well, we might be able. We may shift it up to 6:45 anyway. That way, you know, I might get here about 10 minutes late. So show up.
And we're
going to
be at Cornell next month.
Oh, next month.
That might
That's
be
actually going to work.
Would it be easier or faster or not?
Well, kind of, maybe.
Don't change the time for me. If it's only one meeting, there might be something I can do. I can have.
Okay.
I can do something else.
And anybody have a problem with an earlier meeting in one time? That way we'll be there. All right, does anybody have any new business they want to bring up? Any gripes? Anybody want to, you know, throw things at me? Chairman or whatever. If you do, girl, that I use, she's a deputy.
Yeah, it's snow tonight.
Didn't do your job.
I don't think so.
Alrighty, so anyway, let's entertain a motion to adjourn.
I second that.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.